Hearty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
We begin again with Olympic news. If you tuned in to Tuesday's show, you heard my buddy in Rio de Janeiro, Luis Piazzet, mention the first refugee Olympic team. The coaches and organizers of the team in Kenya say its creation is more than a symbolic gesture, and the refugee athletes are determined to compete for medals in August. Reporter Ian Bior has more details for us.
Teams who compete in the Olympics are traditionally designated by country, and each country sends their best athletes to compete on the world stage. The International Olympic Committee, or IOC, has changed things up this year with their announcement that there will be one team at the Summer Olympics in Brazil's Rio de Janeiro, made up of refugee athletes from four different countries, including South Sudan. The other three countries that add to the plight of millions of refugees worldwide are Syria, Ethiopia, and the Democratic Republic of Congo. Duke Mwancha, a spokesperson in Kenya for the UN High Commissioner for Refugees and a member of the selection committee for the refugee team, says the team wants to remind the world that refugees are regular people who want to live in a world where every individual can work to reach their dreams.
These refugees are going there to compete for the gold, just like any other athlete will be going there to do so. So it's not a symbolic thing. The only difference is that, you know, they're not going to represent any nationalities. They will obviously not have any national anthem of any country played, but they will be going under the umbrella of the International Olympics Committee. The Olympics anthem will be played, and they will be carrying around with them the International Olympics Committee flag.
All athletes left their home countries because of conflict or natural disasters and are now seeking refuge in their host countries, where they also go through rigorous training to prepare for the Olympics. Half of the team is made up of South Sudanese refugees who live and train in Ngong, a city southwest of Nairobi in Kenya. Mwancha says it is a coincidence that half the team is made up of South Sudanese refugees. Over 30 refugee athletes in Kenya competed for a slot on the refugee team, and the five from South Sudan had the best times. Mwancha says he is hopeful that the South Sudanese will bring much-needed awareness to the plight of hundreds of thousands of South Sudanese refugees.
Kenya and Ethiopia host the biggest number of refugees in Africa. And right now, the biggest crisis that we have is from South Sudan. So it's, for me, I can say it's something good, that it can help to remind the world about South Sudan. It can help to remind the world about the challenges that this part of the world is facing right now.
The team members are training in their host countries, but will come together in August for the start of the Summer Games. Tegla Larub, who runs the Peace Foundation training camp, which has trained the five South Sudanese in Ngong, says the team is ready to compete in the Olympics, but they are understandably nervous.
You must understand, these are people who use not to run. They were just ordinary people. They came here, they trained for the last 8 months. So you can see the anxiety they have, because going to Rio is something they didn't expect to happen.
In an interview for the IOC media, South Sudanese 800-meter Olympic runner Rose Nathik Lakonyan says for her, competing in the Olympics will represent years of struggle for her and many other refugees.
Well, I'll be very happy to hold that flag of refugee, because this is where I started my life, and also like for some other people, and maybe make them also to come together as you'll be one team, as long as even if we are from different nationalities, that one can bring us together and interact with so many people all over the world, the different countries. Maybe my first priority may be I need to help my parents also and my siblings. Then after that, I help also some of my fellow refugees as well.
UNHCR says it is seeing staggering numbers of refugees as displaced people worldwide hits an all-time high. The refugee agency says one in every 122 human beings are now either a refugee, internally displaced, or seeking asylum.
It could not have come at a better time. I think it's important that, you know, we have refugees there participating like everybody else, just as a reminder that, you know what, we don't have to overlook refugees. We don't have to forget about it. They are also human beings. They also have needs. They also have things that they want to do. They have dreams, including athletics and sports.
The South Sudanese Olympic athletes are all runners who will compete in the 400-meter, 800-meter, and 1,500-meter events. For VOA News, I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
Thanks, Ian. And reporter Lenny Ruvaga in Kenya will have more on the refugee Olympic team later in the show. Ice hockey fans in the eastern U.S. city of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania have been celebrating this week. That's because the Pittsburgh Penguins won their fourth Stanley Cup championship. Joining us now to talk about that and other developments is VOA colleague and big ice hockey fan, Doug Bernard. Sporty greetings, Doug.
Sporty greetings, Sonny.
Doug, I know you were gritting your teeth a bit, but your thoughts on the Pens lifting the cup again.
So everybody knows that a penguin is a flightless bird. But in this series, these penguins could fly. They really won this handily. And this is a team that this is their second cup in 7 years. This team, we talked about this a little earlier, they really peaked at exactly the right time. They did not finish with the best season in hockey by a long shot. That was actually the Washington Capitals. Washington Capitals flamed out fairly early. Mm. It was just really a matter of this team was, I think, coming together. There was some new talent that was brought in. Phil Kessel, I think, interestingly, he did not. Sidney Crosby, the team captain, won what's called the Conn Smythe, the MVP player in the whole playoff series. But I would argue, and I think others have as well, that it was really Phil Kessel that kind of came in and helped glue this team together for them to really, I think, dominate in this playoff series.
So was their championship a surprise to you, Doug?
No. It was. It would have been a surprise to me at the beginning. But as the this competition went on, you go from 16 teams to 8 to 4 to 2. It was looking increasingly like this was going to be the year again for the Penguins, and indeed it was. And I have to say, they really did outplay the other teams that were in contention here.
Doug, memorial service held on Tuesday for ice hockey great Gordie Howe, who died June 10th at the age of 88. The ceremony held at Joe Louis Arena in Detroit. Your thoughts on the passing of Gordie Howe?
Mr. Hockey, number nine himself. You know, so there was a public event yesterday at the Joe Louis Arena where the Red Wings play, where Gordie Howe actually never played. He used to play. Now, I'm an old Detroiter, so he used to play, and I actually had the chance to go see him at the old Olympia, a storied venue that is just doesn't exist anymore. So, look, Gordie Howe, I think, was the man who really helped define what modern hockey is. And I think more than anyone else, I could reasonably say that he helped change this from a sort of parochial Canadian odd pastime to really an international sport. He embodied so much of what we come to think of now as hockey. And remember, this is in the days before they were wearing helmets, right? So he was a tough player. He was known for really getting up in people's face. Hockey wasn't necessarily always a bruising sport. It is now, in part thanks to Gordie Howe, but it's also a sport of skill, and I think he really brought that in spades.
One of the pallbearers at that memorial service for Gordie Howe, the great one, Wayne Gretzky. What does that say that Gretzky was one of his pallbearers?
It says a lot. Look, it was a roster of people who were there. I mean, Dino Cicciarelli, Guy Lafleur. It was just hockey names from. It just kind of gives me little shivers actually just thinking about it. These are greats from the past, and you know it's interesting that Gretzky was there. Of course, he's called the great one, and Gordie Howe for many years went by the term Mr. Hockey, right? Wayne Gretzky himself actually said that Gordie Howe really was the great one, and it's worth noting that Gretzky's number that he chose when he was playing was 99, and of course that was a tribute directly to Gordie Howe, who played for almost all of his career as number nine.
Doug, memorial services also being held here in Washington and throughout the United States in the wake of the tragic Orlando shooting.
Indeed.
Here in Washington, one of the top ice hockey players, Brian Holtby, and his wife marched in D.C.'s Pride Parade. What's the significance of that, Doug?
This was huge. We've seen perhaps, you know, a hockey figure or two participating in one of these parades. I think several years ago when the Chicago Blackhawks won the Cup, that was part of the Chicago Pride Parade. But Braden Holtby is really one of those characters. Braden and his wife, Brandy, have been so outspoken on this issue. As he referred to it, this is a no-brainer. This isn't something that, you know, the Capitals organization kind of, you know, dragooned him into doing, pushed him out there. This is something, I met him there. I was chatting with him and his wife. They're perfectly, just delightful people. And this is something that means something very important down to their core. And what was really fascinating and great to see is that, of course, there's, you know, not maybe necessarily, this wasn't all for hockey fans. This was a pride parade for people in the LGBT community. But when Braden was there, look, this is the best goalie in the NHL, arguably in the world right now. And when he was, you know, there slapping hands, taking selfies with people, the crowd was just electrified. It was just great to see. And I think a real statement of where hockey is and increasingly professional sports, although some teams may be lagging a little bit, in where they are with accepting of GLBT players and fans.
Doug, while the National Hockey League season has officially come to a close, we can look forward to some possibly new clubs on the horizon.
Indeed.
Tell our VOA listeners about that.
You bet. Well, now the fun really begins. So with the winning of the Cup later this summer, we're going to see the trade deadline come and go. You're going to see a lot of trading of players as teams try to kind of figure out who they can have, the best team they can have under the salary limit. You're going to see the draft, which is always great to see. I've been to several of them. It's just a great event to see all of those people there down on the floor, horse trading. And later next week, June 22nd, the NHL grandfathers will meet and finalize plans for an expansion. There are currently 30 teams in the NHL, and they're looking to add one more. Now, there are two cities that are in the running, Quebec City and Las Vegas. And this is not official, but the early reporting coming out from people who know or are in the know in the NHL say it looks like it's going to be Vegas. That is a very interesting decision, I think.
Well, hopefully we can talk more about Vegas, Doug.
I'm game for it.
Okay, thank you, Doug. VOA's Doug Bernard, thanks for chatting with us, Doug. VOA sports reporter Jonah Haskell has updates for us now on the Euro 2016 and Copa America Centenario football tournaments. Sporty greetings, Jonah.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Euro 2016 is now well underway as the first week of matches finished up on Tuesday. Hungary, playing in its first game at the Euros in over 40 years, looked strong in a 2-0 win against dark horse favorite Austria in Bordeaux. And the North Atlantic island nation of Iceland managed a draw against Cristiano Ronaldo and powerhouse Portugal. 27,000 Icelandic fans, a whole 8% of their entire population of just 330,000, were in Saint-Étienne to watch the game, and they were thrilled by the result.
On the stadium, when they scored the equalizer, the floor was shaking. Everyone was screaming so high.
Oh, it was like the air exploded. Everybody was screaming, and it was a happy moment.
It was, you know, they were the better team, so this was a good result.
The second round of matches is already underway Wednesday as Russia lost to Slovakia 2-1 in Lille. The Russian team has been threatened with disqualification because of violence involving their fans, but with only 1 point through two games, they are on the verge of going home anyway. And later today, Switzerland will face Romania in Paris, and host France will take on Albania, who are making their first appearance at the Euros. Across the Atlantic in the United States, the quarterfinal field for the Copa America Centenario is set. The last two matches of the group stage were played on Tuesday, as Chile got two goals each from Alexis Sanchez and Eduardo Vargas to defeat Panama 4-2 in Philadelphia. With the win, Chile secured their advancement. Meanwhile, Argentina, who had already clinched a quarterfinal berth, looked comfortable in a 3-0 defeat of Bolivia in Seattle. The quarters begin on Thursday when the United States faces Ecuador, also in Seattle. The other quarterfinal matchups include Argentina against Venezuela near Boston, Colombia taking on Peru in New Jersey, and Mexico facing Chile in Santa Clara, California. I'm VOA's Jonah Haskell. Back to you, Sonny.
Thanks, Jonah. Now let's go to Kenya, where Lenny Ruvaga visited some members of the first refugee Olympic team at a special training camp.
The phrase breakfast of champions has taken on new meaning here at the Tegla Larupe Training Center for refugee athletes. Five of these athletes, now munching on a nutritious meal of bread, fruits and tea, will represent refugees around the world at the Rio Games this August. All five originally come from South Sudan. Runner Rose Natike Lokonyen was just 4 years old when her family fled ethnic conflict in the eastern part of the country. She has lived at the Kakuma refugee camp in Kenya for the past 16 years. She thinks of her two youngest brothers often. She had to leave them at Kakuma to come here to train.
I hope I'll do well and get some gold or silver as well if I win. Then I really miss my sibling because since we came to Kakuma, we came together with our parents, but they left. Then I stay with them as well. And here, these are my two siblings whom I took them. They are the youngest one, and these are the two boys who are underage, and now I left them alone.
She says there are good days and bad days in training, but she was headstrong from an early age. She remembers her father punishing her for playing soccer.
When I do escape going to the field, after coming to the field, he do beat me. In fact, I really miss him now because he was just looking after me. So he didn't want me just to participate in any sport, but I insist myself doing that.
The team has a tough training regimen. Every morning, they start with stretching exercises, which last for 45 minutes. Then the team runs for about 2 hours a day. Lokonyen's event is the 800 meters. It may be no accident that the five refugee Olympians that Kenya is hosting will compete in track and field events. This training camp is named after Kenyan marathon runner Tegla Lorupe, who holds several world records. Jackson Kemoi is the manager of the Olympians training camp. He is hopeful about the prospects in Rio.
They had good time in our trials, so that's the special thing they have. But another thing, they are also disciplined. They are also disciplined, and that's what we needed most. These are the best guys, and they are persevere in the camp since September last year up to now.
Lokonyen and her teammates had to flee their homes years ago. Now they will run for gold. For the Sunny Side of Sports, this is Lenny Ruvaga in Nairobi.
Thanks, Lenny. Joining us once again on the Sunny Side of Sports is Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America's social media reporter. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Good to be with you as always.
Welcome back, Andrew. What's trending in the sports world on this Wednesday?
Well, trending just across the internet has been this really tragic incident in Orlando where 49 people were shot and killed in this nightclub. The worst terror attack on U.S. soil since September 11th, 2001. And this hasn't been lost on the sports world. Now, by coincidence of timing, June here in the U.S. is LGBT Pride Month, and you have a lot of Major League Baseball clubs who are having Pride Nights to honor the members of the LGBT community. And so you see, like last night, the Nationals here in Washington, D.C., they had their Pride Night, and they had some really nice tributes that they offered to the victims of this attack. The Oakland Athletics, baseball team out of Oakland, California, they actually had a silent tribute. They usually would have somebody throw out the first pitch at the baseball game. They had somebody just put the ball on the pitcher's mound, and they didn't do a first pitch of the game to honor those victims. So we're seeing a lot of those tributes from around Major League Baseball, because that is the sports league that has their events going on right now. I'm sure that we're going to see tributes when we have the NBA playoff games. If the hockey was still going on, we would see tributes there, but that's wrapped up. And then in Orlando itself, we're seeing this hashtag Orlando United. Now, this is a campaign across all of the professional sports teams in Orlando. Probably most people know the Orlando Magic, the NBA team, but there's also the Orlando Solar Bears, which is a hockey team, Orlando City Football Club, Orlando Pride, which is another soccer club there. And they're all banding together with this hashtag Orlando United campaign, where all of the proceeds from these T-shirts that they're selling that say Orlando United on them are going to go to the victims. So Orlando is trying to, even though they don't have any teams competing right now, trying to support the victims. The next sporting event in Orlando that's going to come up is on Saturday, when one of the soccer teams is playing, the Orlando City Football Club, and they're actually going to take an unprecedented step. In the 49th minute of the game, they're going to stop play, and they're going to have a moment of silence. It's the first time in MLS history that a game will be stopped in the middle of a game for anything like this. So that's their way to honor those 49 victims, is at the 49th minute, they'll all stop play, they'll have a moment of silence before resuming.
Andrew, you mentioned various tributes taking place at sports stadiums all across the country, including right here in Washington at Nationals Park. And I think if you went to Nationals Park this week, in addition to seeing the American flag waving in the breeze, you also saw a rainbow flag.
Yes.
Which symbolizes the LGBT movement.
Absolutely. Actually, the Nationals, what they did, they have the kind of curly W that's the Washington Nationals logo, and they had T-shirts where you had that curly W and it had a kind of rainbow overlay, so it was colored with those rainbow colors. And you also had Billy Bean. Billy Bean is a former Major League Baseball player who came out as gay after he left Major League Baseball and retired. He's now Major League Baseball's Director of Inclusion, and he was actually at that game, at the Washington Nationals game, and he spoke from on the field and said that this was a moving way to have a tribute for these victims.
Andrew, I encourage our Voice of America listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOASunny. And my Twitter handle is @VOASunnySports. If you go to my Facebook page, you'll see a photo of Ian Bior, who we heard from at the top of the show. Ian had a very nice report on the first refugee Olympic team, 10 members, and it includes 5 athletes from South Sudan. Andrew, what else is trending in the sports world?
Well, I want to jump back to hockey. I know we had Doug Bernard on. He was talking about some of the expansion teams and some of what hockey is doing to pay tribute. And I want to talk about the Pittsburgh Penguins, because they did indeed win that Stanley Cup, and they're having their parade through Pittsburgh. And they kind of put the Stanley Cup on the back of a pickup truck, and they're all, some of the players on the back of this pickup truck. Now, usually when they have these big parades, not just here in the U.S., but even in Europe, or the World Cup parade, I remember in Germany, they get all the players on a big bus or a float or something.
That's right.
So a lot of people saying, well, this is the best they could do, is they have just kind of a back of a pickup truck, and it's not really adorned with anything. It was, you know, maybe it was like, maybe they didn't expect to win, and it was last minute. But there's a brewing social media controversy. Did the Pittsburgh Penguins dent the Stanley Cup?
Oh, no.
Now, apparently there are some photos circulating on social media where it appears the base of the Stanley Cup, it looks like there's a bit of a dent. It's supposed to be a circular base. And it looks like part of that is a little flattened out. So they're wondering maybe they dropped it. But conspiracy theories abound about how that might have happened. There are other photos, however, that look like the cup is in perfect shape. So I'm sure from the parade today there might be some amateur sleuths who are trying to get close-up photos of the cup to look to see if it was dented or maybe it might have been repaired and they're covering it up. Who knows? But that's, all these little moments and these little funny little stories that come out through social media, and this is one of them.
And I think Doug Bernard mentioned on an earlier show how each member of the Penguins gets to keep the cup for a day and do with it, hopefully not dent it, though, Andrew.
Hopefully not dent it, but we've seen things people have drank out of it. I think there have been players that have bathed their children in the top of the cup, little infant children. My favorite, as we talked about here on the show, I guess about a month ago, was that Nyquist, the winner of the Kentucky Derby, the horse that was named after that Detroit Red Wings hockey player, got to drink from the Stanley Cup before winning the Kentucky Derby. So maybe it brought Nyquist some luck, although he didn't win the Triple Crown, so not too much luck.
Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America's social media reporter. Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks, Sonny.
And that wraps up the June 15th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Nick Ivanoff. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In 2015, terrorism continued to bedevil significant portions of the African continent. In East Africa, the Somalia-based terrorist group Al-Shabaab continued launching attacks and suicide bombings in Somalia, frequently targeting Mogadishu International Airport, Somali government facilities and hotels popular with government officials and business people. The terror group also set its sights on Kenya. In the Lake Chad Basin region, Boko Haram continues its attacks in northeastern Nigeria, Cameroon, Chad, and Niger. In West Africa and the Sahel, terrorist groups have conducted attacks against hotels and a resort frequented by Westerners. In 2015, one of the key developments in the global fight against terrorism has been the increased level of international cooperation and coordination in addressing cross-border and regional terrorist activity. So, for example, the Lake Chad Basin countries formed the Multinational Joint Task Force to confront Boko Haram, while the Horn of Africa nations are coordinating their efforts against Al-Shabaab in Somalia. The United States is deeply involved in assisting its partners in their efforts to degrade and dismantle these terrorist threats. The U.S., in partnership with Somali forces, supports African Union forces in maintaining pressure on Al-Shabaab and weakening the group's territorial control in parts of Somalia. In North Africa, the United States helps support the Trans-Saharan Counterterrorism Partnership. Through this program, we have been working with Algeria, Burkina Faso, Cameroon, Chad, Mali, Mauritania, Morocco, Niger, Nigeria, Senegal, and Tunis to build the capacity and cooperation of military, law enforcement, and civilian actors across North and West Africa to counter terrorism. The Partnership for Regional East Africa Counterterrorism is a U.S.-funded and implemented counterterrorism partnership that includes Djibouti, Ethiopia, Kenya, Somalia, Tanzania, as well as Uganda, Burundi, Comoros, Rwanda, Seychelles, South Sudan, and Sudan. We are expanding engagement with African governmental and non-governmental partners to better understand the drivers of violent extremism and design effective responses, said Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs Linda Thomas-Greenfield. The United States is committed to partnering with the people and governments of Africa to promote democracy, peace, and prosperity.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, we will discuss African Liberation Day. Tune into Straight Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC to join host Shaka Saleh and his panels of guests.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.